Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. We are in chapter 6 of Sandeha Nivarini, the beautiful stream of wisdom Bhagwan has so lovingly gifted us. He has written the questions. He has answered them. And as you read this beautiful dialogue, you are filled with new vistas of wisdom, new bouts of inspiration, and new energy to walk on this path of spiritual enlightenment, to walk on this path where you don't get bogged down by the vicissitudes of the world, and you see victory in your every thought, word, and deed. We divided chapter 6 into 3 segments, and the last 3 episodes we have been contemplating on the beautiful facets of our psychosomatic anatomy, as they say, our body, our internal and external organs, karmendriyas, gyanendriyas, that Bhagwan has so beautifully elucidated. Today, in the last segment of chapter 6, we continue that discussion. Bhagwan gives very clear elucidation of what the mind comprises of and what should be our attitude, our perspective to make the most of this chance that the Lord has given of being in this world, yet learning to go beyond this world. We are fortunate to have Professor Chandrasekharan today also with us. He has been with us since we started chapter 6. And by Bhagwan's grace, Swami has sent him today. It is only apt that we have him as we conclude this chapter. Brother Srinivas Rao from Bhagwan Super Speciality Hospital also joins us, as he has been doing in the last few episodes. So with prayers at his lotus feet, we begin this discussion. Let us listen to what Bhagwan has written in this last segment of chapter 6.
If so, where do these other things you spoke about, buddhi, chittam and ahankaram, reside?
They too are in this only. The Jnanendriyas and Karmendriyas are both together called Dashendriyas. Of these, 4 are distinguished and referred to as Antachatushtaya, or the internal 4 senses. Those 4 are Manas, Buddhi, Chittam and Ahankaram.
Very nice. That is to say, all are in the same thing. Life is indeed funny. But Swami, what is the function of these 4?
Mind grasps the object. Buddhi examines the veracity of every thought. Chittam understands the fundamental truth behind that thought. And Ahankaram alters the thoughts and takes it away from the path of wisdom. These are the things they do.
Excuse me, Swami. I am asking only to know, where do these exist in the body?
I am glad. Don't worry. Mind is in the kapola. Buddhi in speech. Chittam in the navel. And Ahankaram in the heart.
Excellent. So Buddhi and Ahankaram are in the right places. these are the chief causes of all the world's miseries. Then, if we examine it with reference to your words, it looks as if there will be no misery when these two places are corrected.
You have indeed grasped it correctly. Yes, that is right. First, if words are used in a clean and pure manner, that is proof of buddhi treading the right path. When ahankaram or ego is suppressed and conquered, that is proof of the heart being pure. Therefore, be very careful of these two. Then, even your mind and chittam will tread the path of good vrittis. Then you will be free from any pain or misery.
So, among all these, who is the I? Who is the experiencer of all this?
We have arrived at the right point. You are none among all these. All these exist only so long as the feeling, this body is mine, exists. Some are associated with vrittis or tendencies. The Atma which observes all these vrittis is you. The joy and sorrow, the loss and misery, the good and bad of these activities are all related to the body only, and so they are not yours and will not be yours. You are the Atma. Until this truth is realized, you sleep in the delusion of I and mine. In that sleep, you dream of loss, misery, sorrow and joy, but you don't experience them. Similarly, when delusion is thrown off and you awaken to wisdom, then you understand that all this is not you and that you are the Atma.
Then, Swami, for whose sake do these, the mind, buddhi, chittam and ahankaram, do all this work?
For no one's sake. They are engaged in their own work. The Atma observes everything and its shadow, the Jiva, which is deluded by the association of the body consciousness, plays this drama through all these acts.
So, I think there is so much packed there, isn't it? Bhagwan here is talking about the various facets of the mind, manas, buddhi, chittam and ahamkaram. In the previous conversation where the bhakta is asking Swami, Swami, where are the karmendriyas and the gyanendriya? Please tell me which are the karmendriyas and the gyanendriyas. And Swami is telling all acts done bodily are by the karmendriyas. They are five in number. And those which impart wisdom from inside are gyanendriyas. And Swami refers to hearing, touch, sight, taste and smell. And Swami says together they constitute the sendriyas. So I was initially a bit confused because Swami said there that karmendriyas are the organs which give us external inputs and which are largely related to the body. And in the earlier discussion we had enumerated, you know, it consists of their limbs, your hands and legs and the excretory and reproductive organs, and that is what the karmendriyas are. And gyanendriyas are all these eye, ear, nose, skin. So these are the organs. So Swami says they are internal organs. So which means it is not the external eye, but it is that which sees. And that is how it is connected to the mind, because it is the mind that actually sees. It is the mind that hears and it is the mind that feels everything. And here, when Bhakta is asking about buddhi, chitta, ahankara, Swami says, of the four, of these ten, only four are manas, buddhi, chitta, ahankara. I thought already Swami has said that internal organs are hearing, touch, smell, and so on. But here Swami is telling manas, buddhi, chitta, ahankara. So which are actually the, what is the definition of the Gyanendriyas and how do you make this number 10 of the Sendriyas? And I might be wrong, but what occurred to me is ultimately the mind is what gets us all the internal faculties. So even when you're earlier talking about Gyanendriyas, about the sight, hearing, touch, smell itself, etc., it is the mind. And here, Bhagwan is referring to the four facets of the same mind. Because in couple of discourses, Bhagwan has said, Manas, Buddhi, Chitta and Ahankara are different dimensions, different ways of looking at the same mind. Swami said, when a Brahmin is doing cooking, he is called a cook Brahmin. So the mind, similarly, when it is doing the function of generating these thoughts, then it is Manas. So Swami says, the same, if the Brahmin now engages in preaching, then he is called Acharya Brahmin. If the Brahmin now engages in seeing astrology, then he is a astrologer Brahmin. If the Brahmin now does puja, then he is a pujari Brahmin. But it is the same Brahmin. So Swami says that it is Manas, Buddhi, Chitta, Ahankara. It is the same principle, but depending on the nature of the activity, it gets different names. And so that sort of gave me some clarity.
I have a different point of view.
Sure.
In order for Jnanendriya, the term Jnanendriya,
yes,
to attain Jnana, some form of investigation is required.
Correct.
Okay. Without any investigation, you cannot have the wisdom.
Correct.
Even Karmendriyas, there is also knowledge. But the knowledge is limited to cause and effect.
Mm-hmm.
I walk, my leg is walking, I take a step forward, backward, and you know, because you just interpret the actions in the real world based on those organs of action.
Mm-hmm.
And they give you, if I do this, this happens.
Mm-hmm.
So the cause and effect type of wisdom, no, knowledge, come from the external world.
Mm-hmm.
The internal, what we talked about, the touch, smell, taste, etc., they are also sensory input.
Yes.
Where does it go? This is sensory input. When I touch something, I feel very hot or cold. Or when I taste something which is sweet or bitter. All this information actually projected goes to the mind.
Mm-hmm.
The mind sees this as various objects. So Swami also says, Manas sees the objects.
Yes.
What are the objects? They are nothing but the thought.
Correct.
This is a mic. This is so and so. So the mind by itself, they are... is a bundle of thoughts, and it doesn't have the capacity to discriminate.
Hmm.
So the mind, through the sensory input, they conjectures the outer world,
yes,
as certain objects. This is the table, this is the room, this is where Swami is sitting. You know, you make conjecture about the environment, but doesn't make any decision. Is it good or bad? The buddhi.
Correct.
The next level, the buddhi, which has been endowed with the discriminating power,
mm-hmm,
is the one analyzes the veracity of the thoughts. So the mind is a bundle of thoughts,
yes,
projected by the sensory information, like sun, ten steps, everything.
Yes.
And the manas is the one analyzes it. Oh, this is a good, this is a good one, this is a bad one, do this, don't do this, all those things.
Buddhi does the analysis.
Buddhi does all those things. And ahamkara is that, because of the bodily attachment, I said, I am the one, I did it, and this is good. It takes an input from the buddhi, it takes a conjecture from the manas, takes input from the analysis from the buddhi, and attributes to the
body.
Body, our attachment to the body being, say, I am so and so, I have a label.
Mm.
And then, I did this, so it's happened. So, all this interpretation, the belief, everything happens and goes with the ahamkara. Okay. Now, this is how I see it. Whereas chittam is more or less, trying to understand the truth behind all this.
Fundamental truth.
So, chittam is it. We don't worry about chittam.
Mm.
The main, Swami, what he says is that manas on its own, things appear in manas.
Mm.
Appearance. What is the problem? The attention we give to the appearance and then the belief we attach to those appearances, they cause the problem. So, the moment you are like a child, like you're watching a cloud passing the sky with awe, wonder, the thoughts will come, thoughts will move because of vritti, a lot of thoughts will come. You cannot stop it. When I want to say, I want to stop the thought, in fact, that becomes the thought itself.
Mm.
So you cannot contain the thoughts coming out because of the vritti and vasanas. The only way what you can do, you can be just watch it, just coming in your screen, and then coming and disappearing, okay? Mm. Appear and disappear. So long, you are not attached to one of the thought and then dragged into it through belief and then go. For example, most of the time, mind, what happens? In the mind, the thought is projected. The moment you say, oh, this is me, or this is about tomorrow's work, if I do this, if I don't do this, I will be in trouble. So suddenly what happened? We are attached to one thought, that thought drags me to all over to the worldly affair. So the thoughts might appear. You can have appearance in your, mind, but so long you don't give attention and believe to it, then, that is where the verse says.
Swami also said, buddhi and ahamkaram.
These are the two.
Tongue and the heart. If they are corrected, you will cease to suffer.
Mm-hmm. For example, buddhi. How do we correct the buddhi? Swami says, thought, word and action should be aligned. And thought should be pure.
Trikarana Suddhi.
Trikarana Suddhi. And all of them Suddhi. Suddhi. That means alignment and Suddhi.
Beautiful.
So, the purity of thought is important. When the thought is pure, the mind, the Buddhi is going to analyze about the pure thought only. And if you are going to speak, because the Buddhi is actually through, you are articulate through the speech.
Mm.
Then you are going to talk about the pure, means your thought, the words will be pure. The words on their own cannot be pure unless the thought is pure. Thought is a fundamental thing. Only from the thought the words come. Only from the words the actions come. Okay. Sometimes you may not speak the action, but internally you may speak, but externally you may not speak
even,
out.
Even that speaking is action.
Speaking in action. And even internally in the word, you may actually internally say that, oh, I don't like you. You can hear the sound of the word speaking inside. Internally the loud voice is there. But you may not speak out loud.
Yes. Yeah.
So even that is internal. Happening.
Speech. Yeah.
And our belief systems is getting reinforced into that. And we are dragged into them because we are ahamkara because of this one. So, the bringing purity of thoughts and then the buddhi dwelling in those purity of thoughts and analysis of those thoughts, then speech becomes pure.
Yeah.
So, that means you are basically clearing the... it's like this. Speech cannot be pure unless thought can be pure. You cannot purify the buddhi by speaking.
Happens after the thought.
Thought is a fundamental thing. Everything appears as a thought in your mind, and it is projected. Your interpretation, your attachment, your belief, all comes from the thought only.
Thoughts emanate from the vasanas. Vrittis. Yes.
So the question is, the ultimate aim is that you annihilate the mind, means basically get rid of all the thoughts.
Yeah.
You cannot do it because we are not initially trained. When the early stages of our life, we talked about it last time also, one-pointed attention towards Swami. How do you get one-pointed attention? Either through bhajan, or through namasmarana, or through total dedication doing service. These are all provide you one-pointed attention. Like I just now mentioning before coming into the one here, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. So the... You earn through the dharmic way, and only desire you have is moksha, mokshaya. So all the desirelessness. So that one-pointed, the desire of moksha will eliminate all other thoughts.
Correct.
It'll reinforce the mind. Mind becomes stronger and stronger so that you can focus on one thought. So I think Swami's way of using the buddhi, purifying the buddhi through speech.
Mm.
He says initially thoughts may be impure. But at least initially practice speaking only the, express love to everybody around, express love. After some time, you are automatically, you are only can only think of good things about others and helping others, everything. So initially, mind may say something, your words may say something, it may not be aligned. But at least it start with, speak the, nice, compassionate words, everything.
I think,
purify the buddhi.
Absolutely. I mean, Bhagavan would always talk about satyam bruyat, priyam bruyat, na bruyat, satyam,
apriyam.
Apriyam. Right. So speak truth. Speak truth that is pleasing. Don't speak that truth which is not pleasing. Na bruyat, satyam, apriyam. So I think...
Just be silent only.
Yeah.
If you're going to hurt somebody...
Yeah, don't ever hurt anyone.
Don't utter.
It's very interesting here, the way Bhagavan has associated manas, buddhi, chitta, ankara to the different organs, which you are also referring to. Swami is saying buddhi is associated with speech and ahamkara is associated with the heart. And, that also set me thinking... And then Swami says, Chittam is associated with the navel. Mm. And to me, perhaps, when we are born, navel is the first organ that connects us to our
mother.
And, our past sort of come back from the previous birth to this new birth through the navel, because through the mother's duct, that's how... we are sustained. So in a way, that navel is our connect to the past.
Correct.
And chittam is the memory. Yeah. Because chittam, here Bhagavan has mentioned that it is the fundamental truth behind the thought. But there are so many discourses where chittam, Swami says, is the concentrated collection of everything that we have done. It is the memory. So which connects us to all our past. So that way, and perhaps because there is so much of memory there, with that, there is more understanding of what is truth and what is not truth.
Correct.
Because with life's experiences, that is when you would probably become, it is probably because of those experiences that you are growing now.
Correct.
So, those fundamental principles of life perhaps get awakened in you because of those experiences.
Mm.
So that way, that's how I try to understand chittam associated with the navel.
Yeah.
And buddhi connected to speech. I think this is something which Bhagavan also used to refer to in so many discourses about we speaking softly and sweetly. And just like they say, face is the index of the mind. I think our speech is the index of our discrimination, of our purity, of our sacredness.
Okay.
Because the way you use the words, the way you connect to the other person reflects what is going on inside, reflects what is evolving within you.
Mm.
And I think a person who comes across as someone who is all the time welcoming and courteous and polite with his words is someone who will always be endearing, who will be perceived as a person with a good heart, perceived as a person with the right kind of discrimination between how to speak, how not to speak, how to conduct, how not to conduct, as a cultured person, as a refined person.
Mm.
I think one of the ways you know a person is really a gentleman is through the way one articulates, communicates, and tries to connect. And I think that is where...
Yeah, that's very true. That's really true, and what we feel inside, that gets reflected through our facial expression.
Yes.
And then through words.
Words, yes.
If you're not happy inside, Swami says, always be happy.
Yes.
So if you're not happy inside, you'll only have a castile face. If you're having castile face, you're not going to talk very pleasantly, because you'll only pour out your heart
Correct.
About all your problems.
Yes.
So I think internally, the condition, the environment, what we have inside, is going to reflect in our speech.
Yes.
And the body language.
Yes.
Speech is not the only the verbal communication. So body communication, there are so many ways you communicate.
I mean, as you speak, you communicate through all the organs. You know, even as we speak, our hands move, our eyes move.
The way you articulate the eyes and the way you connect with people.
Yes.
The only thing what you say, you said Satyam Bruvet, and that is a very, very nice reference
Satyam
there.
Bruvet, Priyam Bruvet.
So if we practice that dictum, that we always speak the truth, but if the truth is going to hurt someone, let's be silent.
Yes.
So at least, you know, be compassionate, help whatever you can.
Kantasya
Bhushanam, never.
Swami says, Kantasya Bhushanam Satyam. The ornament for the tongue.
Tongue is truth.
Is truth.
So if we follow, over a period of time, our intellect will become pure.
Yes.
And reflect the real sattvic qualities will imbibe.
Yes.
The ahamkara thing, you know,
when
I was, and Swami said, how do you, you purify ahamkara?
Yes.
How do you, he says, by subduing your ego and all those
things. Yes.
But you might have heard in some of the discourses, I and I.
Yes.
The real I and the other I.
EYE, Swami used to talk about.
Okay. Yes. The other eye, the big eye, is they call self,
aham,
self-realization. Whereas aham brahmasmi.
Yes.
You know that aham is the Brahma.
Yes.
A Brahman. The other small eye, which is basically the ego, ahamkara.
Yes.
But both are rooted in the heart.
Yes.
See, what they say that when you are actually having a deep sleep, or when you don't have body consciousness, you are blissful. You are totally blissful. You are not aware. But you are aware you are blissful. But you are nothing else happening. There is no dream world, or you are not enjoying things, or you are not facing difficulties, or some drama is not going on, because you are in deep sleep. You are very blissful. But when you come out from the deep sleep state to the waking state, to the real world state, during the transition time, the ego rises. They say the mind comes into play. From the mind, next the ego comes. Mm-hmm. Then ego, I think first next the ego, then maybe mind. So the mind projects the world. Then when you come awake, you suddenly start seeing the world again.
Mm-hmm.
So every day, the transition happens when you go from deep sleep. What they're saying is, at the time when you are coming out of this one, that's a beautiful transition time. You will really realize there's no thought. You're still aware. They are coming out. But no other bad thoughts or whatever is bothering you. That's a wonderful thing. You need to somehow capture the transition time to experience the divine bliss. That's what they say. Another thing, Swami says, when the ahamkara is subdued, and ultimately you will see the self. That's what he says, no?
Yes.
So, remember that I had been to Kailash once with my wife.
Mm-hmm.
Manasarovar Lake is very famous.
Yes.
The Manasarovar Lake, absolutely there is no ripple on the top of the lake.
Mm-hmm.
So still, when you see like a sheet of glass, you can see the bottom.
Oh, wow.
You can see the bottom. So when the mind is no perturbation, nishchala tattvam, when you have no perturbation, you can see the deep inside, see the real self.
Yes.
So only those perturbations on the things with through thought induced perturbations, and our attention and attachment to it, because we attach to the body, it causes all sorts of worldly problems actually. So if we can bring the state of stillness, and Swami always says, only in silence you will hear my footsteps.
Yes.
It's only in the depth of silence.
In the depth of silence,
voice
you
of
will
God
hear my
heard.
Footsteps.
Yes.
Actually, that what means that if you are really silent, silent means internal silence.
Yes.
No perturbation. Silent means not the sound, external sound. Internally, you are quiet, quietitude. And you can really hear, see Swami. That's what it means. So when the small eye is subdued, what is revealed, like the Manasarovar Lake, the bottom, the other Atma.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's very.
I think that is what is aham. That is what is
aham brahmasmi.
Yes, that is the absolutely.
It's only a shadow. The jiva is only a shadow of I, Atma.
When you actually really brought this shadow thing, I heard some other discourses from different people. Mm-hmm. One other thing what they say is that you have multiple pots filled with water. There's only one sun or one moon. The moon is reflected in every pot as separate moon. Okay. Now, take a bigger pot, put all these smaller pots inside, pour water. Fill the entire pot with this one. So ultimately, all the smaller parts are completely now submerged. Mm. And only one part with one. So only one thing is there.
Mm.
So what is saying that the real the Paramatma is reflected in our body, various bodies, as individual jivas, appears to be, but they are all nothing but only one.
Mm.
So there's an analogy of reflection in the different parts, and then how they can be combined, they are nothing but the only one source.
Mm.
That's a wonderful.
The whole challenge is actually the mind only. The mind, as they say, is veritable marketplace actually. It's going in 1,000 different directions.
Monkey mind.
Even I was going through some Sri Aurobindo's literature. In The Adventure of Consciousness, Sri Aurobindo says his guru, his name is Vishnu, Yogi Vishnu Lele. He told him that just observe your thoughts.
Just
like,
be a witness.
Like you see these text passes on a screen, you know. So like that, just allow them to pass through. And he just did that and obtained his realization and mental stillness actually. And then he said, there is nothing mind can do that cannot be done in the mind's stillness. So we always think that, you know, we have to keep our mind active to achieve things. It's not like that. Actually, in the stillness of the mind, you are much
more powerful.
Sharper, yes. Then when the mind is still, truth gets a chance to be heard in the purity of silence.
Wow.
It's wonderfully said. And even Nisargadatta Maharaj's guru had told him just to observe his breath. And he did it. He says, I just did what my guru told me. And it led to cessation of thoughts.
The five koshas we talk about, no?
Yes.
Annamaya kosha, pranamaya kosha, manomaya kosha. No? They say that the prana is the sustainer of the annamaya kosha. When people die, pranam gone.
Yes.
You know, prana gone. No? But the prana is the sustainer of the annamaya kosha. But the prana is also controller of the mind. The one level above, by breath control, I can control the mind.
Mind.
But
because after pranamaya, you have manomaya.
Yeah. So
annamaya, manomaya, annamaya, pranamaya, manomaya.
So the prana is in between manomaya and annamaya.
Annamaya.
Prana is, without prana, body cannot sustain. Because body requires prana. Prana without the vital air, body will wither away. So prana is the sustainer of the one below and controller of the one above.
Mm.
So, that's why the pranayama, all yogas, this is the tool given by God by observing the breath. Means when you observe breath, means what happened? Your entire thought is on the breath.
Mm.
You are one-pointed attention towards the breath, and you are only watching the breath, inhaling, exhaling. No other thoughts is coming and crowding your mind at the time. So, bringing your... they also say, when a cow is let loose, it grazes all over the place. The moment you tie a rope in his neck and peg it in a floor, it can only go within a certain area. Mm-hmm. Similarly, the mind, once it is given a task, hey, watch the breath. Then the mind, very seriously, like an obedient child, watching the breath.
Swami gives a very beautiful illustration. Mind is like that demon who is out to swallow you, actually. So he threatens to consume you. And then he says, give me some work, otherwise I'm going to eat you. So you give him a small work and he finishes in no time, he says, the demon. Because his abilities are so much. Then you give another task, he finishes. You give 10 tasks, he finishes quickly. So then what you do is, you tie him to a pole and say to him, go up and down till I say stop. So then this is what actually we
like
are
Rama
making
Jabba,
the mind
Jabba.
Observe the breath. Soham, soham. And that is how you control the mind, actually.
Yeah, because they always say when you take a deep breath, as you breathe in, they say, who am I? And then as you, kumbha, when you're holding, so I am he, you know. Yes, then when you're so and so, then you're living out that all the worldly things.
Puraka, Rechaka, Kumbhaka.
So the breath control is very, very important aspect for controlling the mind. And then anchoring the mind, not even controlling, just anchoring the mind to one thought. And by doing it repeatedly, your mind becomes stronger. Once I was reading a book that Swami Rama is one of the books long time back. Swami Rama, when he was a kid, no, his Guruji sends him to Tibetan monks. Go on, learn from the monks. So Rama goes there and he finds that all these monks, no, during eating, they all sit together, they take a bowl of soup. They're just very, very deep and, you know, they take 100% attention and then enjoying
mindfulness, the food, as they say.
Yeah. So what they do, during the time, you know, Rama used to go and disturb them. They will not bother. It won't bother them. And then they do something else, you know. Then he asked them, what is this? What is this? You know, he says, this is a sadhana. There are five senses, you know. Swami says, no, karmendriyas, and five. Here, you know, the jnanendriya, there are five. Touch, feel and all. Taste. We put 100% focus on one faculty, yeah, which, yeah, is taste.
Mm.
By, we are able to shut off the other four. Then next time, when we are listening to some music about God singing, we put all our 100% attention to that music. There, during that time, there is no feeling of taste or touch. All those things, it doesn't come. So they were able to selectively switch on and switch off. So through this control, they're able to do the sense control. You know, Sama, mm-hmm, you talked about, yes, Sama in, mm-hmm, one of the earlier discussions.
Mm-hmm.
The Sama is by intentionally practicing a sadhaka, controlling, making one 100% effective, mm-hmm, and make the other out of zero.
Mm-hmm.
So by switching this way, over the years, they have practiced and they were able to control anything, you know. So it's wonderful. There are a lot of techniques available to us. Thereby, we can control the senses. By controlling the senses, our desire to get attached to some of the thoughts and being dragged away becomes lesser and lesser. So our buddhi starts hovering only on good thoughts, purity of thoughts, mm-hmm, and then we make the intellect pure, so we walk on the sattvic path, be compassionate,
mm-hmm,
and we become humble, mm-hmm, we become compassionate, we become, our ego is suppressed day in and day out,
mm-hmm,
and then with the feeling that we are not the doers, it's the, mm-hmm, Swami is the doer,
mm-hmm,
and then we overcome that egoist tendencies.
Mm.
So I think it's a long drawn process,
mm,
and Swami very simply put one line, but it's behind the thing is so much involved.
Yes,
and but they all depends on our how intensely we desire to have the liberation.
Mm-hmm.
If we have that very high intensity, we will certainly do this day in and day out, every breath. Mm-hmm. We will do it.
Yeah.
So I feel it's very, very
talking
nice.
About intensity, Swami used to talk about Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa, and Swami used to say how every day, you know, he used to cry at the mother, one more day has passed, one more day has passed, and I have not seen, I have not attained you, you know. So that was the kind of
tapana.
Yeah, tapana within, you know.
Pining.
Yeah, that pining. In fact, so here, going by what Swami has said, you know, earlier when we were talking about the buddhi being associated with speech, discrimination being associated with speech, I think, so the lesson for us is, if we want to come across as a person who discriminates well, you know, who is able to exercise this faculty of what is right and what is wrong, then we should be a person who speaks softly, sweetly, politely, and in a manner that is pleasing to others.
You cannot always oblige, but you can always talk obligingly.
Speak obligingly.
So you begin with that.
Begin with that, yes. So I think if we strive to do that, Swami is telling here, even though manas, buddhi, chitta, ankara, Swami says, okay, two are most important. Because these two are responsible for all the miseries of the world.
Hmm.
The speech and the heart.
Heart.
And amkaram. So I think that also, sir, touched upon about how we should control the ego.
Give a little bit of a small episode.
Please.
I had only one interview with Swami
mm-hmm.
on 27th February 2008.
Okay.
So Swami called me and Dr. Balasubramanian, he was my student at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So when I, inside the room, and then I was freely talking to Swami, Swami, we have come all the way to be at your lotus feet for spiritual progress. So we need your guidance. Swami looked at me smilingly and then said, Konjam kopam vastundi. Reduce karo. Kam karo.
Anger.
Anger.
Reduce your anger.
Believe it or not, it's not very simple. Because when do you get anger? The anger comes because you are ahamkara. You know, you are attached to the body, you are glorified about your achievements in the past, and you want certain people to agree the same way, things are not going your way.
Ahamkaram, mahakaram, he will say. Very spicy.
So in a very simple statement, said, you know, subdue your ego, get rid of it, get rid of the
anger.
Mm. So it's a very nice statement. Leading to this, in the year 2000, me and my wife came to Swami first time.
Mm.
I wanted to see, I was not into Swami. I wanted to see, who is he? Everybody says he is God. So is he really God? You know, or is somebody, some sadhu, wearing a robe and walking around? You know, this is how I had a initial time. So one of the days when we were in the ashram, I came from Australia for a week. So on a Thursday, like today, okay, and we were having some discussion about some financial matter in the ashram. So we had a difference of opinion. So she was upset and she said, no, I don't want to take my dinner. If you want to, you go and have your dinner. I tried to console her. See, this is your ashram. Because she was into Swami. I was not into Swami.
Mm-hmm.
See, this is your ashram. I know, you know, you can't behave like this in your ashram like this. You know, go and eat your food. I will also go and eat my food. We'll discuss this later when you go back to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
She says, no, I will not have food. I don't feel like hungry. You go and have your food. So after quite some time of trying to console her, convince her to have the dinner, I failed. So I got angry. So I told her, say, I don't want to leave you empty stomach and go food myself. So I will also not eat. Today being Thursday, it is your Swami's day. Okay, I angrily said, it's your Swami's day. Let it be a fasting for him. Okay? I declared my not eating the dinner angrily that it will be a fasting for Swami. Next day morning, I got up early and then I took bath. I did my Gayatri Jama because being a Brahmin, I did my early Sandhya Vandan. Then I asked my wife, hey, are you coming for Darshan? He said, no, you go. I'll go later. So I went to Swami. I had a very good Darshan. I came out. Those days, the bookshop was opposite to South Indian canteen.
Yes.
Women's canteen, ladies canteen.
So
I came from Australia only to know about Swami. I have not read many books about Swami. I wanted to buy a single book which will help me to understand the divinity of Swami. Okay? And who is he? What is the background? Why people are all telling he is God on the earth, walking on the earth and all those things. So I walked into the bookshop and there are so many books of Swami in multiple languages. From Tamil, English, Hindi, so many things. You know, because those days the bookshop was very small. I was looking at it. I don't know what book to buy. Because I want some book to buy to understand Swami. So what I did, I kept my hand in the bookshelf. I went on feeling the books. And one book I felt very, very comfortable. I felt very warm in my heart. So I took the book title called Gems of Wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I opened the book at random. Before opening the random, I said, everybody says he's God. So if he's God, let him answer. Swami, is this the appropriate book for me? So I opened the book. I think the page, odd page 367, I think. I opened it. My attention went to the second paragraph of the book. In that book is written, the Lord looks for sincerity and devotion from the devotee. And next line, if you are awake on a Shivaratri day because of your illness, it will not win Shiva's favor. Next, if you quarrel with your wife, and if you don't eat for the whole day, it is not considered as fast. And then it says if you are intoxicated, it's not considered samadhi, and all those things are there.
Mm-hmm.
And it is quoted on what discourse Swami said. The beauty is, I am buying a book at random, opening the book at random, and I'm reading a paragraph at random. In that paragraph, the second,
exactly,
third line,
yes,
directly tells that if you offer anything to Swami or the Lord with anger, it will not be accepted.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you don't eat it for the whole day.
Mm-hmm.
See, I only missed one dinner.
Right,
correct?
Right, right.
So, when Swami reiterated the same thing in the interview, this is 2000 after 8 years in the interview room, because a couple of days before I had an argument with one of the professors from other department, and then he was refusing to give some allocate money which Swami has given for everybody. So I said, how come you are refusing it? It's Swami's money. You know, you have no right to say that I will give, I will not give and all. So then Swami is watching like that. Then he said, why are you bringing Swami? You know, this is my decision. So finally we walked out. But Swami knew. So in the interview room, he's telling me, you know, reduce anger. Then I told Swami, I know, I want to reduce, I know, but sometimes I find it very difficult to control. So you are the Lord, you have to help me. And he smiled, and then what you are saying is that leave everything to me. Even if it is right, you think it's right for you to be angry, don't be angry. Because when you leave everything to me, I know how to fix it. So this is the lesson I learned. And so the anger, like a part of the subduing the ego.
Yes.
The anger is one of the important,
absolutely,
aspect. The anger comes because we are attached to the body.
Body, yes.
We are attached to our achievements, the past, and I am so and so. And we need to subdue that part. Even if somebody abuses, like, so we talked about whether prices and abuse, we should be of the,
yes,
economy or equipoised.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to develop that. That is very important, actually.
All this comes because of our feeling of that we are the body, Swami.
We are the doer. We are the body. I am
so
and so, I am doing it.
Actually, finally, if you see, you do not exist. There is nothing called you.
This body itself doesn't exist. It's only an illusion.
If you don't have that feeling, then everything is resolved there. It's only the divine that takes over you.
Correct.
In fact, Swami, in one discourse, gives a very beautiful principle to follow, to subdue the mind. And Swami says, Chittasya Suddhi Karmani. How can you purify the mind? Only through action. And when it comes to action, Swami says, you can follow one principle which will help you to do actions which will lead to tyaga. Because Swami says, our actions should lead to not bhoga, but tyaga. Our actions should be such that our tyaga mixes with yoga and doesn't lead to bhoga and then to roga, as Swami used to mention.
I just wanted to mention about the tyaga.
Yeah.
Long time back, I bought a small book on Satisfy Quiz book. It's only a very small size book. In that book, when I was reading, he said, you know, there are five, Tommy said, love, prema, you know,
Satya Dharma
Shanti, prema, you know. There's a sixth one. There's a question. What is the sixth one? The sixth one is the tyaga. Swami himself.
Correct.
So the undercurrent in everything is the feeling of giving away.
Exactly. I mean,
without feeling that you are giving away.
Yes.
You are sacrificing. I am sacrificing. If you think that's
exactly
the problem.
In fact, Swami says that your bhoga. See, you can be in the world, experience whatever you know.
Endowed upon you.
Yes, and so Swami says your bhoga should be mixed with tyaga. Like you can experience the world with the attitude of a renunciant. So
the other aspect, Swami said, be selfish, but include everyone.
Yes.
So what I'm saying, enjoy the bhoga, but share with everyone basically.
Exactly.
So if you include everybody,
yes.
So the whole world you like to share. Whatever you are getting,
yes.
I think you like to share with everyone.
So I think this I felt was something very beautiful, where Bhagwan is telling that, you know, for yoga, In fact, Bhagwan very beautifully says that, you know, when the Lord says that I will take care of you, yoga kshemam vahamyam. Well, Swami says, what is yoga? Generally, people think that yoga kshemam vahamyam means Lord will says, I will look after you. Means I look after all your needs, I will look after all your wealth. Swami says, no, Lord will look after yoga. What is yoga? Yoga is your journey toward God. Yoga is your attaining the Lord. Yoga is you becoming one with God. Yoga is your union with God. So God will look after this.
Yes.
This is the welfare that the God...
That's the path of evil.
Yeah,
evil.
That is what God is interested in. This is the yoga kshemam that God will do. And Swami says the way towards this is, you mix your bhoga with tyaga. Whatever you want to experience, you can experience in the world with the attitude of renunciation. Then every act becomes purified. Every act becomes... is
correct.
Sattvic sadhana. And here Bhagwan gives a very beautiful practical tip which Swami has mentioned also in many discourses. Swami says, whatever acts you have done which are good for others, forget them. Never ever remember the good that you have done for others. Because when you remember the good that you have done for others, then there is expectations, and then there is sometimes this feeling of that person not reciprocating. It can be lead to anger, it can lead to frustration, it can lead to expectation, it can lead to so many other...
Actually, the expectations lead to the disappointment.
Disappointment.
So if you don't expect anything, accept whatever...
Because you feel that I have done this for this person, and how can this person say this to me? How can this person not reciprocate? How can this person not like this? How can this person not join me for this when I have done so much for that person? So Swami says, forget. Forget the good that you have done for others. And then Swami says... At the same time, you forget the bad that others have done to you. So, because when we remember...
Forgive them,
basically. If you forgive and forget the harm that others have done to you, because when you remember that, then you want to retaliate,
then
you want to revenge,
there
is agitation, there is every time you look at that person, there is a negative feeling, and you know, you're not able to love freely...
Love doesn't flow.
It blocks.
There is a blockage.
There is a block. So, and that is what is not leading to purity of our action. So, when Swami says that, you know, your chittasya suddhi, you should do that kind of actions which will lead you towards subduing the mind, you're purifying the chitta. So, if you follow this principle, wherein you, whatever good you do to others, do not ever remember the good that you have done to others. Basically, you are not owning them. You don't associate yourself, because the simplest way is surrender. Like you have done, you have not done. Because Swami has done it, so why should I even think that I have done anything? And similarly, if someone has done some harm towards you also, okay, Swami wanted it. Swami wanted me to go through it. Why should I ascribe that to that person? We all the time feel bad because we think this person has hurt me. But the truth of the matter...
The feeling of separateness.
Yes.
That when you say that person, the person, basically you are saying the duality.
Yes.
You talk about other person existing as separate entity.
Yes.
So when we are actually striving to get the unity.
Yes.
In diversity.
Yes.
So we have to somehow start seeing Swami in everybody.
Exactly.
So that is the beauty of it, you know.
Yes.
If you see Swami in everybody, you will never think of hurting someone.
Yes.
You will always try to love somebody. Because you will try to serve him.
Yes.
If he is need, you know, you'll run around to serve him.
Yes.
You'll always look for opportunity to serve.
Correct.
Like how students know many times, you know, they will stand next to Swami. The moment Swami wants a kerchief, somebody will run with a kerchief.
Yes.
Somebody will take a glass of water, you know.
Yes.
They are all the time looking at Nandikeshwara, looking at Nataraj Shiva, and waiting to serve the Lord Shiva.
Yes.
Like that, our students are waiting.
Yes.
The moment Swami is showing some sign, they will immediately run around, try to, you know, and totally focused on Swami only.
In fact, that's a very beautiful point. Swami says in a discourse, just like sunlight enters through a tiny hole, even though there is a hall full of darkness, the eagerness and the ease with which sunlight enters and brightens that area, Swami says, that should be your eagerness to serve whenever you get an opportunity.
Maybe
with that much eagerness, you should be waiting for an opportunity to serve. Just like sunlight enters through a small hole in the door. I think, and So these are the kind of actions which will help us to
purify. Lord is purify also equally them. Eager to bless yes. you with more wisdom.
More. Yes.
Correct. With every little
yes. one step you take, each yes. step
you
yes.
take,
yes.
He wants to give you more light.
Give you
that.
More. Give you more. Yes. And I think, see, even though this is definitely a thought process which needs so much of inquiry, you know, where you don't have to think about yourself as the body. You have to eliminate that feeling that I'm the body, I'm the mind, and just know
the falsehood.
That falsehood. I am the Atma. I mean, that is what Swami says. Ultimately, you are just, you are in this delusion of I and mine. Just like, you know, in the sleep, you forget your body. I mean, this is, as we have discussed before, this is also a dream. That is basically a sleep where you get dreams, and this is a dreamless sleep, but this is also a sleep because we are asleep in our ignorance. And
delusion.
It's because of this ignorant sleep of illusion that we think that we are the body and we are the mind. So Swami said, once you wake up from this, and then you know that you are only the Atma.
Then everything is.
Then everything is Atma. But I feel while this is what is intellectually to be known, but the way to go forward is through the path of action and Namasmarana, as we discussed before. And the actions should be these acts of complete selfless service. You know, this nishkama karma, as Swami says, where you don't identify yourself with the action and you do only sacred acts and you fill yourself with namasmarana.
See, action leads to purification of mind.
Yeah.
Once the mind is pure and still.
Yeah. Because you can purify the mind only through actions.
Knowledge actually pours out yes. from within yes. you.
I think once you purify the mind through actions, yes. as sir said, mind becomes like Manasarovar.
And mind becomes Swami still. Swami also said that there are various levels, spheres of mind.
Yes.
There is something called lower mind, there is a higher mind,
yeah.
there is a super
I remember
mind.
The one.
From the altitudes
discourse.
Of our being, higher yes. altitudes of our being
yes.
the mind opens up a little more.
Yes, yes.
What we have is a logical reasoning mind, actually.
Exactly.
Which is very, very
limited. We are trying to fathom or describe or even feel the infinite self with our limited knowledge of the faculties we are given. Only thing is, how do we use these faculties, although limited power, towards the ultimate goal? So the Swami's way of saying that, forget about all the chitta, this and that, just two things you take care of it. Buddhi. You know, yeah. and then I saw once in Vrindavan, one of the festival time, they put these posters, you know, like in the cloth, the Swami's quotes are written.
Yes.
Like love all, help, serve all.
Bunting.
Like, you know, help ever, hurt never. In one of the things he said, speak as you feel, act as you speak. You know, just yes. just see this. Speak as you feel, not from the mind chatter, from the heart, because yes. you feel the emotions and You're deep inside the heart, you know. Speak from what you feel, you know, as you feel. And act as you speak. I mean, the thought, word, everything is
yes.
aligned.
Yes.
You know, your thinking is from the heart.
Yes.
You're speaking from the heart. And act as per the, as you speak. So everything is aligned. So very nice statement, you know. It's just, it caught my eye. I could not forget that statement. Speak as you feel.
Yes.
Act as you speak. Very nice.
And that's what
Beautiful.
Bhagwan always mentioned. Mahatmanam and Duratmanam, right? Manas ekam vachas ekam karman ekam mahatmanam. Manas anyat vachas anyat karman anyat duratmanam. So anyone who has unity of thought, word and deed is really a human being. He is really a mahatma. And if you don't have
but with the purity
harmony,
of thought. That's
with
very
purity
important.
Of thought. Absolutely.
Because, you know, somebody might say that I would like to murder you, and then he may speak that I'm going to murder you, and then he'll murder you.
Yes.
That is not the
that is
thing.
Not.
But Swami
that
says, but however, although alignment is there, but the thought has to
be. Tikrana Suddhi should be there. Suddhi, purity, yes. Yes.
Then only your buddhi gets purified and
yes.
walk purified.
Yes.
And your you know, aham is getting subdued.
Yes. In fact, when you look at, you know, again, you cannot always not marvel at the way Bhagavan has set up these institutions, you know, be it the hostel, be it the Satasai organization, be it the samitis, be it the hospitals and the colleges and radio site. You know, you look at any of these institutions, Bhagavan has basically created these institutions as spiritual sanctuaries for us to effortlessly walk on this path.
Really?
He's created this
it
beautiful...
It becomes so natural to us.
Yes.
To talk about spirituality, talk about...
you know, to do selfless service. You know, he's blessed us with plenty of opportunities to do service. And it is not just true for Prashant Nilayam or Brindavan Anandpur, whoever, wherever they may be. There is a Satya Seva organization, there are people out there. You know, so anywhere you can create this kind of an atmosphere, and Bhagwan has just created a model here for us to Swami emulate
has
and
any
live.
Number of times said this himself, that there is no organization like Satya Sai organization.
Yes.
Because the people movement it is.
Yes.
The individual transformation at a global level he is doing.
Yes.
It is most essential for the growth of everybody on this planet.
Because once you come here, you will have to serve. You know, you will, whoever you are, you start to serve. And the moment you start serving, there is some amount of tyaga involved, some amount of reduction of your ego involved, say some amount of sacrifice involved. You begin, you start on that path. And with time, you know, you definitely are a much better person than what you were.
And the last
yesterday.
Bit of the discourse,
yeah.
I think we need to touch upon that to conclude it.
Yes.
Swami talks about that you are beyond the, whatever you see, you are beyond this buddhi.
Correct.
Ahamkara, everything, you are beyond everything.
Yes.
And you are untainted, you are the Atma.
Yes.
And so
Swami says the Atma observes everything and its shadow, the Jiva, which is deluded.
Yeah, it is a Jiva.
By the association of the body consciousness.
Body attachment.
Yes.
Body consciousness is the one which is actually taking us towards the sorrow.
Correct.
So that we have dwelled upon. Okay?
Yes.
Correct.
And it's very.
And he asks, you know, the Bhakta asks Swami, for whose sake do this mind, buddhi, chitta, mahankara do all this work?
Swami they are doing on their own.
For no one's sake.
This ahamkara is the one thinks that it is for me.
They are doing their own work,
their
Swami
work,
says.
It gets attached to it. That is awesome. Mine, I am doing it, etc.
Yeah.
Things happen.
Yes.
The stories evolve.
Yes.
But the body attachment
ultimately
with the belief that it is the one doing it.
I mean, you know, Bhagwan used to very beautifully sing, Satsangatve nisangatvam, nisangatve nirmohatvam, nirmohatve nishalatatvam, nishalatatve jivanmukti. So here satsanga is, the satsanga is for us to keep the company of the Atma. If you have that satsanga, then it will lead to nirmohatva. You know, nischala tattva and jivana mukti, that whole process starts. So I think that is what Swami is saying. Don't associate yourself with the body. Don't associate yourself with the mind. Associate yourself with the Atma. Yes, it is nice to say. It is nice to intellectually understand. But I think the way to practically implement is through these opportunities of serving.
Service
through these opportunities of doing namasmarana.
That purifies the ego. You know, reduces, subdues the ego.
Absolutely.
Then there, from there you go.
I remember when someone wanted to do Kundalini yoga and you know, try to see if he can follow that path for blossoming of the Sahasrara chakra and all that. Swami said, you just be in the Satya Seva organization and do everything that is mandated for you to do in the Satya Seva organization. You don't have to do this.
Swami always discourage this type of, you know, guiding yourself. You know,
because
sadhana.
Unless you have a proper guru, these things can be very dangerous.
One, second thing is, if the mind is not pure,
yes,
this shakti raising in the body,
yes,
it might lead to all infatuation and other problems.
Yes,
so
yes,
many
yes,
other
yes.
difficult
yes.
times you will have.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what says if you purified
thing.
Your mind,
yes,
yeah, then all these things
automatically
will
come.
It will come
so
automatically.
Surrendering to the divine is most essential in this path.
Yes,
actually,
absolutely.
Correct. Otherwise, you will be in danger.
Danger. Yes. Swami is going the easiest and the best path suited for our
times.
Really,
really.
And I think it is really. Our opportunity and it's His grace, and only thing we have to realize it, and we have to walk on that path with that kind of diligence and sincerity.
So if we summarize this chapter 6, no?
Yes.
What we can say that there are organs of action, the jnanendriya is also inside.
Correct.
There are tools and faculties are given.
Yes.
Question is, how do we use them?
Correct.
So that we are in Godward path.
Yes.
All the time. So Swami has very nicely, subtly, very nicely and simple instructions He had given. then that understand that these, all these projections, everything, if you don't give any importance to it, if you, you know, not attached to your body,
yes,
so nothing to worry about it.
Mm.
So long you are attached to the body and this is mine, this is what I am doing, then it's a problem.
Yes.
Then understand that you, the Atma, where you are the Atma, but unfortunately the shadow, the Jiva, believes in other things.
Correct.
So understand that aspect and be convinced about it.
Mm. Yes.
Like you said, when the Guru says one word, the Guru,
observe the breath,
that you are God. He meditated upon your God for 3 years and enlightened.
Mm.
And Ramana Maharishi, his guru said, Sumair. Suma means just be quiet. So he's not just mean quiet, mean he sat in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
He went into quietude and then he attained his enlightenment. So the conviction that one statement of the Lord, if it can trigger and then take you to the intense level of practice and sadhana, I think every one of us would have been
good thing you summarized this, because I too felt actually this chapter actually has summed up the whole our life so beautifully and took it to such a logical conclusion.
Mm. In fact, I'm reminded of how Bhagavan used to always mention in his discourses so many times, don't follow the body is a water bubble. Mm. Don't follow the mind is a mad monkey. Follow the conscience.
In the interview I had, Swami, I asked Swami many things, and then Swami said something to me I could not hear. I said, Swami, could you please repeat it to me, because I have a hearing problem because of my aspirin heart problem and all. Swami came very close to me, said, and then tapped my heart area and said, keep me in the Hridaya and do my work. So
keep me in your heart,
and do my work. And after this has happened in 2008, 2011, Swami attained. So what he was saying, that I may not be in the physical body for a long time.
Mm.
So don't be attached to this physical frame and then become very dejected and depressed later.
Mm.
So do my work.
Keep
in the Hridaya. I am always there. You know, place me in your heart.
Mm.
So I think that's a wonderful message.
Yes.
So for us to understand that we are have to subdue our ego, everything, and
then
keep Swami in the heart,
yes,
and do his work,
yes,
and wherever you are,
yes,
and that will lead us to the right path.
Absolutely. Mm. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, sir, for coming for all these sessions.
Thank you, wonderful.
For Swami's discussing call. Chapter 6, Swami's really grace that he sent you to the studio. So, dear listeners, if you have any queries or comments on this chapter or anything that we have discussed so far, please feel free to write to us. You can write to listener@radiosai.org. You can also send us your feedback on our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Offering this humble endeavor at his lotus feet, we take your leave, and please spend time to open the pages of this beautiful treatise that Bhagwan has gifted us, and let us make use of this beautiful opportunity to fill our lives with a happiness that extends till eternity. Thank you so much. Sayonara.
Sayonara.